call this meeting to order. Pastor Dan Keck, the Currie Beach Memorial Lutheran Church, Currie Memorial Lutheran Church, would you please give us our invocation and lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
Absolutely.
Although I think about leading the Pledge of Allegiance, I'm going to ask for a pay raise for that. Great to see you all this evening. Let us pray. Gracious God, we thank you for this day. We give you thanks for those gathered and for this wonderful community in which we live. Lord, we pray that you would continue to bless us and bless what we do here. And Lord, bless the council as they make decisions on behalf of the rest of us in this community as we continue to move forward in our future. Lord, we give you thanks especially for Chief Cooper and all the years of service that he has given. Lord, just bless him in his retirement. And Lord, as we move forward with the police department and a new chief, we just pray for continued guidance and peace in this community. These things we pray in Jesus' name. Amen. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Welcome, everyone. Also, welcome to our distinguished guest. And so I don't forget anyone this time. I would like for each of you to rise and give us your name and your title, starting with our Sheriff's Department right here.
Chief Deputy Ken Sarvis from the Henry County Sheriff's Office.
Chief Chris Five, County Police Department.
Mitch Cunningham, Deputy Chief, Wilmington Police Department.
I'm Assistant District Attorney Honey Jordan.
Have I left anyone out? Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. As you know, we are here tonight to honor and celebrate the retirement of our former police chief, Dennis Cooper, who is escorted tonight by his beautiful wife, Patty, and his daughter, Morgan. Now, the rest of you are probably wondering why it took us so long to do this. Well, there are two reasons. First, we just didn't want to say goodbye. So we kind of drug it out. But tonight, we want to let you know how much we love and respect you, Dennis. Would you and your family please join me here?
Sure.
Okay, on behalf of the town of Currie Beach, we're presenting you with this plaque that says, Dennis Cooper, Police Chief, January 1996, June 2016, presented with great honor and appreciation for the years of loyal and dedicated service to the Currie Beach Police Department and the citizens of Currie Beach.
Thank you.
An honor to personally work with Dennis. I think you all know that I'm your emergency manager,
And my first interactions with Dennis after I moved back in 1996 was the two hurricanes, Bertha and Fran. I think he was surprised as a new police chief. I was surprised as a returning fireman. And I think the town was surprised just because it's been a long time since we had stuff like that happen. And it was awesome how well it went for how long it had been since the town had a storm of those magnitudes. So from that time on, Dennis has shown as a new police chief. He was a police chief for 7 or 8 months when that happened. And think about how well it went if you guys were here, for those of us that were here. And since then, he's led the department to probably more dogs per police officer than any department in North Carolina, more IT equipment per police officer than any other department, and probably more money brought in with the feds per police officer than any other department, and probably a lot of other metrics that we don't even know about. So Dennis, for the professionalism you've shown and the guys that you leave behind with us, I personally would like to thank you, and I'm sure the citizens would echo this. Thank you very much.
So the only thing that I would like to say to you, Dennis, is I don't know you quite as long as this gentleman. But and I always knew you were a good guy, a nice guy. And see, you had Sam's in the street, we had meetings, you were always a good guy. But I didn't know how good a guy you were until I talked to your peers when you went through your retirement, until I talked to Mr. Ben David and the people that you supported around the community, the police community. Things that you've done, the respect shown, then I really knew you were more than just a special neighbor. So my congratulations to you for a wonderful professional career that culminates in the gratitude of your peers and at the gratitude of your town. And thank you for the wonderful group of men you've left us with.
With something he had written about you, and I would like to read it to you and our guests. Please have patience with me. Robert Dennis Cooper was born February 4, 1961, to Robert Amos Cooper and Thelma Louise Cooper in Silva, North Carolina. As a young boy, Dennis always enjoyed and cherished his time with firemen, EMS, local police, deputies, and highway patrolmen who would stop by the family business in Silva to visit his dad. Their dedication to public service did not go unnoticed and had a profound impact on his desire to pursue public service. After excelling academically and athletically at Silva Webster High School, he attended Southwestern Community College and Asheville Buncombe Community College, where he studied. As his desire to be involved in the community service increased, Dennis joined the Black Mountain Fire Department as a volunteer EMT in 1980 and was eventually hired as a paid fireman. He served with pride for over 2 years as he continued to hone his skills. Dennis joined Biltmore Forest Public Safety in 1983 as a public service officer and served until 1988. His interest in law enforcement steadily increased at Biltmore, and he successfully completed basic law enforcement training in 1984. He was enticed to leave law enforcement, however, and go to work in the private sector to use his accounting education and personnel management skills. However, his interest in being a law enforcement officer and serve the people of the community grew stronger after leaving the profession. In 1990, he and his wife, Patty, moved to Curie Beach. And in 1992, the desire to serve people overcame that desire to make more money. He was hired as a patrol officer in March 1992 and became the fifth full-time member of the Curie Beach Police Department. Dennis came to know almost every resident in town by their first name. He quickly became a certified state instructor, canine handler, an investigator. He was well-liked by the residents and fellow officers, and his enthusiasm was well-received. In 1996, Dennis was appointed chief of police after the retirement of Chief Troy Hamilton. His management skills were severely put to the test several months later with the arrival of the devastating Hurricane Bertha in July and then Hurricane Fran in September. The tremendous 1-2 punch destroyed many homes and businesses, knocked out utilities in Kerry Beach, and closed the town down for several months. Dennis, however, coordinated with local, state, and federal agencies to provide food, water, services, and security for the town and the emergency personnel and its residents. He personally made contacts with private individuals and companies who donated their time, money, and resources to help pull the town through the devastation. He worked tirelessly for months to help get the town back on its feet. We asked many people to briefly describe Dennis. Some of the responses were humble, intelligent, compassionate, fair, honest, patient, friendly, ethical, happy, thoughtful, a family man, a team player, great leader, religious, selfless, trustworthy, calm, caring, competitive, and the list goes on and on. One thing people generally don't call him, however, is chief. He was known by the residents and employees, Dennis, and he wouldn't have it any other way. He was the man in the finely pressed pants and the button-down shirt with the warm, friendly smile. He wore a uniform, maybe once or twice a year at events that required it at his office. Many of the residents in town had his cell phone number, which he answered 24 hours a day. No problem was too big or too small for him to handle. In 2001, Dennis's vision for Kerry Beach Police Department became a reality as he oversaw the migration of the department from a tiny little office in Town Hall to the development of a new building for the Kerry Beach Police Department. Dennis, officers in the department, local contractors, and even citizens all pitched in to build the new police headquarters. A plaque in the foyer with a list of 36 names of people, businesses, and groups that provided significant effort for the construction of the facility is a tribute to his leadership skills. And guess what? Dennis Cooper's name is not on that plaque. In 2001, Dennis was also nominated and accepted in Class 207 of the prestigious FBI National Academy in Quantico, Virginia, whose mission is to support, promote, and enhance the personal and professional development of law enforcement leaders by preparing them for complex, dynamic, and contemporary challenges through innovative techniques, facilitating excellence in education and research, and forging partnerships throughout the world. He became the class treasurer. That goes back to that accounting thing. But he was also very instrumental in raising funds for the 9/11 memorial at the Academy. Dennis brought his refined and improved skill set back to Kerry Beach and gradually began a makeover. Education, training, and community policing were strongly encouraged. Officers became a reflection of the values that Dennis possessed. The town of Kerry Beach went through a huge real estate boom in the late 90s and early 2000s. The full-time population tripled from 800 in 1996 to about 2,200 today. Tourism brings over 800,000 visitors each year to area attractions and to Kerry Beach to vacation and enjoy our beaches and facilities. The department has grown to 12 full-time officers, 5 reserve officers, and a full-time administrative assistant. The department has seen the creation of a K-9 unit and special investigations unit. Dennis has made sure his officers are the first to receive the latest tools and training, such as automated external defibrillators, crisis intervention team training, tasers, computers, and cell phone forensics equipment, and related training all have made our officers and community so much safer and a better place to live. In 2015, Kerry Beach Police were the first in New Hanover County and one of the first in the state to obtain body cams. He has partnered with the Secret Service, ATF, FBI, and many other agencies to provide training and support to Kerry Beach, something not available to small towns and not available to a lot of large towns. Outside of police work, Dennis has been a great supporter of the community. He created a senior watch program, assisted the hungry through the Kerry Beach Blue Line. He reached those in need of food and throughout the year and on holidays. He supported the Waccamaw Boys and Girls Homes through donations and created a fund that helps the homeless, indigent, or unfortunate who are in need of food or gas money to get back home. He has provided many dollars from his own pocket. Living and working in a beach community brings certain risk with Mother Nature. In 2002, Dennis received the National Weather Service and Sea Grant Award for his efforts to inform vacationers of the hazards of rip currents. He worked with the North Carolina Office of NOAA and Sea Grant and the National Weather Service to prepare, publish, and distribute educational brochures to motels and the tourist center. He had signs posted at all beach walkways, ensured lifeguards were well trained, and spoke to organizations to promote rip current awareness. He was recognized for his leadership and cited for being proactive to reduce tragedies. He has participated in and promoted annual hurricane awareness seminars for residents and visitors to help them understand the impact it can have on our community and the steps that are needed to minimize that impact. In addition to looking after our residents and visitors, Dennis has helped his own officers in a very unique way. He cooked lunch and dinner for officers working on holidays and summer weekends when area businesses were packed with tourists. Occasionally, he prepared breakfast too. This gave his officers the opportunity to relax, get out of the spotlight, and catch their breath. Dennis strived and lived his life in an exemplary manner. He sacrificed his birthdays, holidays, anniversaries, and family time to make his town a better place to live. His contributions to the people of Kerry Beach are immeasurable. He treated his officers like family, counseling them when needed, pushing them when they needed a push, and putting them in a position to succeed and grow. If Kerry Beach had not already been named, we may very well be called Cooper Beach. Thank you, Dennis, for your lifetime of service to the citizens of Kerry Beach and to the state of North Carolina. Just read went viral across New Hanover County and across the state. Because of this, I would like to invite Steve Keene, the Director of State Regional Operations for the Office of the Governor, and our North Carolina State Representative Ted Davis Jr.
Ted, good to see you.
Good to see you.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you so much for inviting me this evening. I'm privileged and honored to be a part of such a wonderful occasion. Honoring an individual that wears the uniform, that wears the badge, and wears the gun. And I'll forget about that and the one bullet. But the thoughts of an individual, as we know, the actions come from that. And of course, integrity comes from those actions, from those thoughts. And thinking about a chief and the responsibility of a policeman, whether they're in a uniform in the military or rescue, highway patrol, emergency medical people, and certainly police. Today is a day that we want to honor that, and the governor reaches out and makes note of, especially those, the veterans and the police and those who are in public safety. And today, I brought a little something. The governor asked me to come and be a part of this, but I do want to turn these honors over to your representative, Ted Davis, who does such a wonderful job and supports the governor's initiatives. And so I'd like to recognize him this time.
Thank you very much. We're here today to pay tribute to a remarkable man. And I am very proud to be part of this ceremony. Dennis Cooper has had an exemplary 24-year career with the Kira Beach Police Department, more than 20 of those as chief of police. For Dennis, public service is not a concept or philosophy. Throughout his professional life, Dennis has been a fireman, EMT, patrol officer, expert marksman, law enforcement instructor, top-rate canine handler, FBI National Academy graduate, certified forensic computer examiner and cell phone forensic examiner. He is someone who has assisted, consulted, and collaborated with the United States Customs and Border Patrol, ATF, DEA, FBI, and the U.S. Secret Service. As a former assistant U.S. attorney, that really means a lot. Dennis Cooper is a great chief and a public servant. He is in tune with the needs of both the citizens and of his co-workers. He is someone who anticipates problems and searches for solutions proactively, and someone who motivates his co-workers and creates opportunities for them to succeed. For 24 years, Dennis has created an atmosphere where the citizens of Kira Beach feel safe, where they know and respect their police department and their officers, and where the officers return that respect through the practice of public service every day. I cannot think of a more deserving public servant than Dennis Cooper to receive the Order of the Long Blue Crown.
Thank you, Dennis.
that there are other people that deserve this too. But I'm grateful. I'm without words. I can say that I couldn't have done anything without those guys that stand back there behind me. They made me look very good for a very long time. And so, guys, on behalf of y'all, I'll accept this for us, okay? That's just how it works here. And also on behalf of my family that I get to see now more often. I've been retired for 6 weeks now, and I just wanted to tell you, it's pretty damn good. So I will say this, I know we're in tough times in our country of law enforcement, so my only request, if you want to do something for me, is just hold our law enforcement community in prayer for all the things that we're going through now. And I just look at what's sitting here with Mitch and Chris, and what's left of your careers, and I pray Godspeed. I pray he holds you tight, keeps you safe, gives you guidance and wisdom to work through difficult times, because it is a difficult time now. To my community, I look around the room, I know everybody in here, and everybody in here is my friend, and I know you know me. So I can't thank Curabish enough for the opportunity I've had to be here. I have thoroughly enjoyed my time here. It's my home. I just couldn't ask for a better place to raise my daughter and to live. It's the best place ever. And I've traveled around quite a bit, and I've seen a lot, and you can't beat it. So, guys, the governor's office, I can't thank you enough for this. I just don't know what to say.
Well, there's a toast here that you're able now to recipient of this award.
You'll have to read it. I don't have a cheer.
I wanted you to be a part of this too. And, but we can sort of look. I know you know it by heart, but here's to the land of the long leaf pine. It's a summer land where the sun does shine, where the weak grow strong and the strong grow great. Here's the downtown, the Illinois State.
Amen.
Amen.
Now I don't have to stay for the rest of council meeting.
To join us next door at Beach Walk for a brief reception, okay, and party. And I would like to ask that council have a break for the next 30 minutes so we're allowed to join you.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Join us, everyone.
Stay. You stay here.
We'll make you look tall. All right, guys, here we go. The thing about 3 seconds of video. We've got 1, 2, excuse me. Here we go. 1, 2, here we go, one more time. 1, 2, 3, got it, Willie? 7, 3, all right, guys, thank you so much.
I don't know. Go to go.
I make a motion we excuse Jim Dugan from the council meeting due to illness.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Yes.
Okay, I'm glad we had such a beautiful, nice, where did it go? A great audience to stay with us because I'm just so excited to share this with all of you. As most of you know, I was in Beaufort about a week ago for the North Carolina Coastal Federation annual banquet, and there were two awards that were very distinguished. Let me tell you about the first one first that has to do with one of our people, not in Kira Beach, but on the island. I know all of you know Bruce Holston.
Yeah.
He received an award for advancing advocacy efforts to ensure a healthy coast. He is the managing director of strategic management and political consulting firm and has served the regional advisory committee for the Federation's office in Wrightsville Beach, has been a force in the development of New Hanover County's comprehensive plan. He has extensive experience in industrial mining. So when he recognized the threat that Titan posed, he came calling to see how he could help stop Titan. His wise counsel helped us send Titan packing. He continues to be engaged in many of the Federation's advocacy issues. Meanwhile, wanted to present this award to the town of Kira Beach.
Good.
It's very
beautiful.
Okay. And it says, North Carolina Coastal Federation 2016 Pelican Award presented to Kira Beach for exercising leadership in the protecting our coast from offshore drilling. And let me briefly tell you, 31 local governments exercising leadership in protecting our coast from offshore oil. And some of the local ones were Carolina Beach, Kira Beach, Wilmington, and Wrightsville Beach. And there's a little write-up here about there that I will pass on to Willard. But most of all, I just wanted you guys to see how nice that is. Okay? Okay. Now then, are there any comments or questions about the consent agenda?
No, I'd just like to say good job by Arlen on the rate for the garbage truck in the consent agenda. Very nice rate.
Yeah.
Could you do some lines for me, actually? Make a motion to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Okay, on our regular agenda, I have a couple of additions. Are there any other comments before I get into this? Okay. Under department head business, number 6, Works Department B, lift station funding. And C, asset inventory assessment. I would like to add those. And then, it's
asset inventory assessment?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And then under the commissioner items, we will add one for Craig to discuss ROT and all the work he and Jim have been doing. Okay. Do I hear a motion to accept the agenda as changed or as revised?
Make a motion. Accept as revised.
Second.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Do we have any anybody to address the council? Okay. Discussion and consideration of committee business, board of adjustment, community center, marketing, parks and recreation, planning and zoning. John?
Good evening, council. At the August meeting of P&Z, we were asked by the council to review a set of beach safety and conservation standards that had been drafted and actually go into Section 12 of the Pure Beach Code, which is the section on parks and recreation. Before I get into that in a little bit of detail, I think it's kind of apropos that was given to us last month. We reviewed it, we're going to talk about it, and then what happened today, we received the Pelican Award during last week, which has to do with beach conservation and protecting our beach resource. The gentleman was awarded, that the mayor mentioned, for his work on coastal management. And coming up on the 8th of September is a public meeting on the BIMP, B-I-M-P, which Beach Inlet Management Plan. And the purpose of that plan is to preserve and enhance the value of the coastal resource of North Carolina. So it's very apropos that we're going to talk about beach conservation and safety standards.
Could you give us that date again?
8th September. It'll be at the Government Center from 6 to 8 p.m., totally open to the public. I would like to attend, but I can't. I have a previous commitment that evening, so I cannot go. I've talked to a couple of guys on P&Z, and neither one of them can go, but I'll check the other two. So, if you have somebody in mind that you think should go to represent the town necessarily, I don't know. There is, in the message that I got regarding that meeting, it said it would be held throughout this area on different nights.
Yes, right.
And I may be able to go some other night. So the beach safety and conservation standards, I'm not going to read all the way through this. You have it in your packet. We discussed it on P&Z. We thought it was a very applicable to our needs here in Curie Beach. We did make two recommendations for changes at P&Z, and they're highlighted in red on the copy that you have. And with those two changes, the P&Z approved this being added to Section 12 of the Curie Beach Code.
And this just requires a motion
for hearing.
This one's a public hearing session?
Yes.
Okay.
But it had to be in the zoning. It's not Chapter 19. It's not Chapter 19, it's Chapter 12. Yeah.
It's Parks and Rec, Beach and Safety and Conservation Standards. I don't think it does, but.
It probably would not, but I would recommend that this one have one due to the subject and what could come forth later.
Okay.
So we need to set up.
It gives it a substantial moral backbone having had the public behind it.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Do we want to set a public hearing then before the next meeting?
The P&Z did not see this as a controversial issue at all. And
right.
It's just setting some standards
right.
for how to protect the coastal resource that we have along Curie Beach to protect the people, wildlife, the environment, the San Diego cultures.
That's not the point. This thing could have legal implications later down the road. That's why I'm trying to help it out that way if possible.
Right.
Do I hear? Well, how about discussion? Do you want to have it before the next council meeting or that evening of the council meeting?
As you're discussing that, let me throw, the last part that we recommended in the highlighted in red there, down at the last sentence of the policy, shall be evaluated by the pertinent department heads.
Right.
And what we mean by that is if somebody comes and says, I want to put on a fireworks display down on the beach, that's not for the council to decide.
Right, that's right.
It's for the department head, like fire and public works and police and those people, to make these decisions. Certainly the council approves changes to the heritage code.
Right.
But we didn't want to have a policy such that the council got involved in all the different decisions about what's happened to the beach.
Right.
Okay, do I hear a motion?
The next meeting is September 20th.
Yeah.
Council.
Yes, September 20th.
Make a motion we set the public hearing at 6 p.m. on September 20th.
Second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Anything opposed? Okay, motion passes.
We work in Z.
Yeah, very good. Shoreline Access, Beach Protection and Parking Committee. Oh, I'm sorry, I thought she was coming up front to speak. Okay. Non-town committee reports. Okay. Discussion and consideration of department head business, administration and recreation.
No items.
Finance. Farnham.
Oh, yeah.
I just have one item. At the July meeting, you directed me to go ahead and transfer some funds from the general fund to a capital project fund for the architectural fees for the proposed town hall expansion and fire station. This, what you have in your packet, just kind of makes it official. We actually need to do a separate capital project ordinance, budget ordinance. So this keeps this project in place. We don't have to renew it each year. It'll keep it in place until the project is complete. But this, what you have in front of you, is really what I'm going to call just like the phase one or planning phase. So it's for $50,000. $28,500 was the architect. Since then, there was a topographical survey, I think, that's required. That was another little over $3,000. So rather than come back every time, I just rounded it at $50,000, so we have a little bit of room to work with any other planning expenses that they prefer. And that's funded by a transfer from the general fund. So it's really just to make it official.
Do you need a vote from us to do that transfer?
Well, that, and also to adopt the capital project budget ordinance.
I make a motion we adopt the capital project budget ordinance as presented. And transfer the appropriate funding
as requested
from the general fund. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Thank you, Arlen. That passes. building department, fire department, police department. I guess everybody's next door, aren't they?
Yes, they are.
Okay, Public Works Department. Let me tell you, Sonny is really having some health problems, and so I promised him that I would not force him to be here tonight. And so in his place, even though I'm not the liaison, there are a couple of things that he and I have been talking about. The first one, the one that is on here, item A, the cost to install and light, to install and light, decorative and solar lights on Atlantic Avenue. This is something the council asked him to provide information on in August 2015, and in talking about it recently, which I will get to in the next line item there, looking at the new lights that Duke Energy has installed and how bright they are on Atlantic Avenue. I asked Sonny if he could, again, go back and get cost figures for us on what it would cost to replace the four tall lights up there, the decorative lighting like we have in the park. Apparently, Duke Energy has a new process for doing that, and he did meet with Patty Pollard from Duke Energy this morning. She sees no problem at all with replacing the existing lights with the same type that we're using downtown, but she will have to work up a price and schedule as soon as, and as soon as he has that information, he will pass it on to us. That doesn't mean we have to accept it, but it would be nice to have it. Okay, on item B, we've had lots of emails back and forth and everything. I think as most of you know, I'm not finished with lighting yet.
Okay.
I'm still so excited about Dennis.
Good. Sorry.
Okay. On the lights that Duke Energy has installed, I have provided you with an article from the American Medical Association that has to do with health problems the lights could potentially cause for humans. I know we've had several residents and guests contact Town Hall and contact Sonny and contact me about the lights as far as turtles are concerned, and the turtle people here in Kiri Beach and in Carolina Beach are being very, very vigilant on that to let us know which ones are a potential problem, and the ones on Atlantic Avenue especially, and there's one in particular in Carolina Beach. But in addition to turtles and other wildlife, the fact that they could be a health hazard, I wanted to bring this to your attention. The lights that have been installed are, I want to be sure to pronounce this correctly, Mr. Engineer, are 4,000 kelvins, is that the way you pronounce it? Kelvins, which is the color temperature, okay? And it is recommended that they be 3,000 kelvins or less. In fact, the wildlife people recommend 2,600 kelvins or less. And so with finding that information out, over the past 2 to 3 months, I've been collecting information from Duke Energy, from North Carolina Wildlife Resources, from the professor at University of Connecticut who wrote the AMA report and the article is about, from the U.S. Department of Energy, from Florida's Fish and Wildlife Institute, and from the International Dark Sky Association in relation to a lot of the concerns expressed by some of our residents and visitors. already told you about kelvins and how this is higher than what AMA and the Department of Energy and the wildlife experts recommend. Because of this, I would like to schedule a meeting, have Duke Energy come and talk to us, and one or more members of the North Carolina Wildlife Resources Division, and have them, and I will provide all the information to them that I have collected the last couple of months, and I plan to provide it to me and all of you. But I would like for them to come and address that information and discuss it with us. I'm not asking that Duke Energy do something or not do something. I would just like for them to come and discuss it with us. I was hoping to do this at the next council meeting. It could be very lengthy. we could have it on a separate night, or if our council meeting could start at 5 o'clock that night and allow them to have an hour to talk among themselves and invite the general public. I think an hour would suffice. So I'm open for comments.
Emily, is given that the LED lighting is less expensive, are there filters or something that they can step down the blue light wave?
Well, they can put senior home in here. They can put the shields on them, but they only go on two sides of the light. They don't go on the front of the light. And I think Sonny talked about this before. They, but Duke Power has indicated they can be very expensive. We would have to pay for these. They would not. But even with those on there, it does not shield humans from the light if, you know, they're under it, or, you know, you have a child who happens to be staring at it or anything. It does not help that. There are different kinds of light other than white light. There is amber light that's similar to the sodium lights that we already have here. Well, there are LED amber lights that Florida kind of supports. And sidebar here, Florida has a state law that you're not allowed to have lights on any of their beaches at all, period. But if they did, then the amber ones are the ones they would recommend. And for some reason, loggerheads hate the amber lights. They will run away from them and into the water in a second. They hate them. So it's a you know, good potential alternative. None of the other animals that are found anywhere, at least on the coast in the United States, will run away from amber lights. So if we, you know, once every 5 or 10 years, we might have a green or a leatherback that could be a potential problem. But otherwise, that's a good alternative. Shading them on the ones that are directly on our coast to keep them away from the turtles, that's an alternative. I'm sure Duke Power could come up with some alternatives. And of course, just having a different, even if you do a white light, an LED that's 2600 or lower. But I would like for them to maybe tell us what their suggestions would be.
Okay.
Mayor, can you share what the threat to a human is from the fire?
Sure.
I was going to ask that also, because you said,
it suppresses melatonin.
This should be.
But how long do you have to stand in the street like that?
Well, and that's a good question. Okay, that's a good question, and we can get a copy of the entire report and let everyone read it. You have this in your packet. Okay.
It's a high blue content and damage the retina. Stunning.
Okay. There are two main problems. The first is discomfort and glare. Because LED light is so concentrated and has high blue content, it can cause severe glare, resulting in pupillary constriction in the eyes. Blue light scatters more in the human eye than the longer wave lights of yellow and red, and significant levels can damage the retina. This can cause problems seeing clearly for safe driving or walking at night. You can sense this easily if you look directly into one of the control lights on your new brush. Oh, it says how you can test this out on other things. Color temperature reliably predicts spectral content of light, that is, how much of each wavelength is present. It's designed specifically for light that comes off the tungsten filament of an incandescent bulb. This conversion described outlining normal incandescent
Has OSHA weighed in on this issue? Is there standards?
Department of Energy is working on that. They have acknowledged that, you know, there are levels that are too bright, but they haven't come up with any standards yet. In the case of white light, it's estimated to be 5 times more effective at suppressing melatonin at night than the high-pressure sodium lamps, which have been the mainstay for street lighting for decades. Melatonin suppression is a marker of circadian disruption, which includes disruptive sleep. Bright electric lighting can also adversely affect wildlife, for example, disturbing the migration of birds more than anything else. I want to make one thing clear. I don't think anybody that I have talked to anywhere has said at all that we should go back to sodium, because they are basically the world is, the energy world is doing away with sodium. So that's not even an alternative. That's, nobody is suggesting that at all. But the, other than the white light or the blue light, there are other spectrums of LED that are in yellow and in red that are a lot safer. And there are lower white lights that are safer. But mainly I'd like for Duke Power to come and explain that to us, because I am definitely not a good expert on that area. You can come and explain.
Well, I don't think they're going to be good experts either, right? Yeah. I mean, so, or they want to put it in because they don't want the heat either. So
yeah.
I think the issue is it's a new issue and everyone's working through it.
And I would like for our residents and our turtles and our birds and our wildlife to be safe. But most of all, I'd like to really be able to discuss it, and maybe that would help us decide whether we should or should not try to pursue it or ask to have any changes. Any questions? Any more questions?
So, do you want to make a motion?
Mayors, technically, mayors are not supposed to make motions. That's why
actually,
I haven't been doing
that's
it.
That's not true.
If you take your ethics course from the League of Municipalities, you will learn that that's one of the things mayors are not supposed to do. It's not illegal.
In our charter, you're a voting mayor.
You can actually do it.
You are, have the same rights as any other councilman, period.
That's the good news and the bad news.
So what's the motion you would like to encourage one of the other three of us to make?
I would like to I make a motion that we hold a meeting at 5 o'clock on September the 20th to invite Duke Energy, the North Carolina Wildlife Resources Division, and any interested citizens to discuss the LED street light issue.
Is it part of a council meeting, or is it just a open?
It will be open, and
open
if
meeting,
any
right?
of you can, you know,
it's
come
a special
at five.
Meeting, right?
Yeah, any of you who can come at 5 o'clock, that's fine. If you can't get off work or
no, I'll get off. I just wanted to know.
But yeah, there
what
would
the
be
was.
More than two of us there.
Yeah, so it's a special meeting.
Have a special meeting at 5, public hearing at 6.
There you go. I second the motion. I second the motion.
Okay.
We'll get a vote on.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Okay.
Cool. We'll point out if it lasts a long time when you open it up just to.
Well, when we.
Well, it won't be more than an hour.
That's right. So
it won't be more
than
an hour.
It'll be advertised for 1 hour only.
Okay. All right. Public Works B, lift station funding. Last week, while you guys were talking to the architects, I attended a training session in Lumberton by the North Carolina Department of Environmental Quality on their application process for state and federal funds for drinking water, wastewater, and two other issues that I will get to later. It was it was very educational. And frankly, I really, really enjoyed it and spent a lot of time talking to the staff during lunch and probably for almost an hour after the session was over. Brian came to see me the other day and we talked about it. And I believe some of us have been emailing back and forth all day today. You have information in your handout that involves an email from Brian that presents a different timeline than what he presented two or three weeks ago. And let me explain to you why he has a different timeline in here. First of all, as far as what we would qualify for, we absolutely will not ever qualify for these particular grants. What we do qualify for is a 100% 20-year loan, which right now the interest rate is 1.4%. Whatever that rate is at, on September 30th, which is the application deadline, that is the rate you lock into. So they use one half the going rate, and so right now that's why their rate is 1.4. Nobody has any prediction of what rates will be a month from now or a year from now, but that's what it is now. Arlen ran a calculation, an amortization schedule. As you know, probably for I don't know how many years now, we've been talking about doing this, and the number I think most of us have always heard is that this would cost us approximately $500,000. Understand that does not include any of the engineering cost, regardless of where we get the money from. But I had Arlen run the amortization schedule on that based on the 1.4% and the 3%, which was the last percentage that one of our local banks gave us. And I believe I sent all this to you in an email. What it would come down to is, first of all, the banks would require 15 years, not 20 years. The monthly payment would be approximately $42,000 a month, and the total interest would be a little over $128,000. The loan with the state is 20 years with a monthly payment of approximately $28,000 and total interest payment of a little over $76,000.
Just those payments are annual payments.
Right.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. Thank you. Yes, chime in anytime. Those are annual payments, and I said month. I'm used to dealing with banks on a monthly. Yes, those are annual payments, and with a total interest of a little over $76,000. That's about a $55,000 to $60,000 savings, not counting additional costs that would have to be considered in there. One of the things you have in your packet is, and probably the very first thing we need to talk about, is the pump station site comparison that Brian did for Sunny. He compared putting it, you know, where it is now or adjacent to it, which is on the side of the building, or putting it across the street in the property that we purchased last year. A couple of things. You can see all the pro and con issues here, but a couple of things he has not mentioned is that some cost, and this doesn't have anything to do with who we get the funding from, regardless of where the money comes from. The site next to where the pump is now, next to the Public Works building. Because the area is so small, we would be required to provide a survey of that lot. And I don't know if we have a survey. Sunny evidently didn't indicate that there was one available. So we would have to hire someone to do a survey there. Also, there is a big storm water issue that, you know, would have to be designed so that it doesn't force water off onto neighboring properties. And so that would be a cost. The property across the street, he has indicated, would be a better access for maintenance and maybe more cost efficient. But we have the whole issue that Sonny has been concerned about, and that is putting it in a neighborhood. And you can see some of the designs. One of these is the one that Carolina Beach has, where it could be very aesthetically pleasing. However, that's a huge additional cost. And we also should have a public hearing with the people in the neighborhood to let them, because we had already promised them we would let them know if we're going to do anything with the property and have their input. There could be a possibility of some odor, of course, it also with the one next to the Public Works building, the same way. So Sonny's recommendation that he indicated to me this morning was he would rather put it adjacent to the one he already has and not on the property that we purchased. He does not believe that should be a part of that residential neighborhood, that it should be hidden as much as possible. So wanted you guys to know that. I mean, it's his decision, but he wanted you to know what his feelings were on that. So, if we were to consider applying for the state loan, deadline is September 30th. I told you about, you know, what the cost figures would be. However, there are a few requirements in there that would cost us some additional money. The application itself is 6 pages. 2 of those Arlen can do. 2 of them are where I have to sign things, and 2 of them are sort of what Brian would have to do with help from us. But in addition, there are things that are required, like a map of the area. And also, you have to do an environmental review no matter what kind of project you have. But if you aren't dealing with the state, then the engineering company can do it the way they usually do it. If you deal with the state, apparently they have a very detailed set of forms that, according to Brian, are very lengthy and very complicated, and so his company always charges $15,000 for an environmental review and $15,000 for an environmental assessment, whether it's a $1,000 project or a $1 million kind of project. So you're looking at $30,000 right off the top, right there. That's the main extra expenditure, okay? Now, on the scheduling process, these loans are for 2 years. You have 2 years to complete your project. You aren't required to spend 2 years. In fact, state would be very happy if you would do it a little bit shorter period of time. But I talked to Seth, the guy who's in charge of this, and one of the things they had pointed out in the educational session was if you have any engineering cost before September 30th, such as Brian helping us with the application, you cannot be reimbursed through their loan. But any engineering cost after September 30th, starting October 1st, you can be reimbursed for. For example, instead of oh, the state will notify everybody in January as to who receives the loan and who doesn't. Instead of waiting until February 1st to do the environmental review and the environmental assessment, which could take a couple of months to put together, and then taking a couple of months to do the design and dragging it out for 2 years, the guy told me that they would work with us, that they've worked with other towns, and they'd be willing to work with us to do as many things that the state would possibly allow between now and January. So that, and even with the local government commission, because we're going to have to go to them regardless of where the money is going to come from, and work with them. The permit system, which normally takes 6 weeks to 2 months, or as we've seen out here, even longer, we can also ask them to fast track it. And the gentleman said that he has seen them do it in 2 weeks if it's a small project, okay? What Brian and I both, I think, would like to do is sit down with Seth in Diener and talk to him about all the things he said to me, how serious he is about that, and whether or not he thinks we truly have a chance to obtain a loan. He indicated that since this is a very small project, it shouldn't be difficult. Plus, in the funding cycle this spring, they had a lot of loan money left over that nobody applied for. So they not only have the money available for September, they also have extra money from the spring. But it's really up to you guys. If you think you would like to pursue this or have additional information, Brian and I are willing to, I have to be in Raleigh 2 days next week anyway, sit down and talk with him and anybody else we need to talk to find out what really are the prospects of this. Are they just saying this to pacify your mayor, or is there really a possibility that they would be willing to let us do a lot of the work before January in order to fast track the project? So I threw that out to you guys for discussion.
Well, so one, I think if you look at what we have from the July 31st report, we have $1.9 million in cash investments for water sewer. So we could pay for it in 1 year if we decided to, if interest is the big issue. I think adding staff resources and paying $30,000 for an environmental study, which basically eats up all the advantages of the savings on the interest rate. And oh, by the way, our trash truck was only 1.7, so I don't know if we did a shorter loan, we wouldn't get the same interest rate. We just don't go for 20 years. I just don't see adding the staff time to do that unless the finance officer says there's some huge reason that I don't understand. I mean, we build up the water sewer fund for projects like this. I appreciate the state's there to help towns. There are towns that need the help, but we're fortunate enough we don't need the help. I don't think we should pay interest to anybody if we don't have to, right? And so I would never want to do a 20-year loan when we don't need to. You know, we could definitely afford a shorter loan, and we could pay some of it up front if we had to. So, I mean, it sounds like a lot of staff time. I think the number three you added, asset inventory assessments required by this as well, right? Which you didn't talk about.
Well, that's enough.
I'll get to that in a minute. But yes. It's required by this application, yes. Right? So that's more
We can't put that together by the end of September. I understood that Sonny has an asset inventory.
Yeah, okay.
He just has to make it available to the state.
Yeah, okay, I'm sure he does, right?
Okay,
but
yes.
I'm just saying that all of that staff work, when we wouldn't have to pay the interest anyway, I don't know why we would do that. I'm not sure I understand the value prop. And maybe I missed something, so maybe you other guys do, or maybe you can, or Arlen can explain to me why, what's the advantage, right? Other than it's a great program, and there's plenty of communities in North Carolina that need it, right? That can't afford to do what we can do.
I just probably wouldn't recommend that we pay cash, I guess.
Okay, I understand that.
The reason being is we have the the bypass project that we're
cash
for,
okay,
and a couple other things. So, but you know, what's the best financing option? I mean, I used 3% on that because I had reached out to a bank a couple of months ago when we first started talking about the account hall fire station thing.
Right.
And for a 15-year loan, you know, they gave 3%.
Right.
It was also a larger amount. I think I was using $2 million.
Right.
So that's just a guess at this point, that 3%.
But I mean, for the garbage truck, you did 5 years and got 1.7%. So I think there's payment in there, right? If we say that, okay, we want to pay the same interest rate as the state, we just have to have a shorter loan. And that, I mean, that's the bank risk position. But money right now for someone as financially sustained as Curie Beach is fairly cheap. You just got to go shorter. And we just got to balance that. I'm not saying that it's not a good deal. I'm just saying that there's a lot of added work in there, and I don't know that there's a big value prop there unless we're just worried about the annual outlay, right? And I'm not saying, you know, $100,000 isn't a lot for annual outlay. That would be a five-year loan or a little more, $115,000, $120,000. But that's not out of hand for what our water and sewer system does, I don't think, right?
Well,
I know, we just changed it, and we'll see, but...
I'd have to look at that because,
right,
I guess for the past few years, we've basically been bringing in what we need to cover our operating expenses, I guess, versus a lot of reserves.
Well, and do projects. Sonny's done projects with some of that money. It's not like projects haven't been going on. This is just a bigger than normal project.
Right.
But there's been water sewer projects spent every year in his budget.
Some small things, but yeah. I mean, it would just be weighing that all out.
Right.
I haven't really looked at that part of it that to say if we were to go, yeah, shorter loan, yeah, we definitely have a lower interest rate.
Right.
And Brian really has not given us any figures for what he really thinks the cost would be going with the state or without the state. Yes, he does not like to do the state's environmental report or assessment, but he has to do an environmental review regardless. It's just the one for the state would cost us more money.
Yeah, like
almost everything
right?
else, not $30,000 more. He hasn't told me what it would cost to do the environmental review that's required, even if we go with a bank, because it's required by the local government commission.
Right. I'd have to look at what type, because when we did the park and when we bought the three lots, we did a very simple environmental survey, basically, that our questionnaire that that BB&T provided.
Right.
And that also then went to the LGC, who accepted that as part of the process.
Right.
Now, for a lift station, you know, I don't know if there's different...
I'm sure there's more.
Yeah.
There should be. I would hope there was, whoever it is. But
right.
But I think Brian rightly signaled it's going to cost more if you get a state loan.
Yeah.
He can't tell us how much, but what
right.
what was the interest savings between the two? That you
it's about
$55,000
to $60,000.
Right, over the life of the loan.
Between
the right.
That was
your if you did 15 years, right, and using 3%.
I think what we need a couple options, right? We need some numbers, because right now we're talking about conjecture, what we think things are. One thing I do agree with Sonny on, I do not want to go with option two unless there's a really big reason and lose the future potential tax value of that property.
Oh, you mean
put it over there in the neighborhood and then lose the value of that land to either reuse it ourselves or to sell it and make it a tax-bearing property. I don't think, I for one, would not support that.
Well, and I think Sonny wants his, all his equipment in one place, which
right.
I agree with.
So I agree with him on that particular point. On the point of costs, David, I'm with you. I don't want to borrow money I don't have to borrow. I don't run my life that way. I don't want to run the town that way.
Right.
So I guess I would like to see some numbers on if we do it our way, at our schedule, or with Brian's support, or if we have to do it the state's way. Just a view. I'm not sure what the answer is, one way or the other, until have a chance to look at a few numbers. You might have a better understanding of that than I do, right?
No, he has not really provided us with the financial figures at all. And I understood from him this morning that he would provide us with something this afternoon, but we have not received that.
That's for busy.
But it would be nice to have something that we can compare, because like I said, it's going to be well over 500,000. I mean, and that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you pay cash or you borrow money, it's going to be over 500,000. We just have not received the figures on what that could be. Okay, and I love to pay cash for everything too, but I'm with Arlen, you don't do that in government. That's how the town got into trouble about 10 years ago.
That's not how the town got in trouble 10 years ago.
Well, it's part of it.
No, that has nothing to do with it.
Our town managers paid cash for a lot of things that we should have had loans to pay for instead.
But it's from a designated fund. Why don't we just let this one move on until we have some numbers together? And then we can take the recommendation from the finance department and from Sonny,
right,
and from the liaison.
And Sonny does not care how it's financed.
Right.
As long as we do it.
Right. We're going to do it. And I think, so from my standpoint, I appreciate that at a conference you found a funding opportunity. But I think that gets submitted to the finance director, and he reviews all of it and brings it back to, as staff work, to the council. Right.
Okay.
And I mean, I'll probably do whatever Arlen recommends we do, but I just think that, one, cash was not exactly how the town got in trouble, and two, Curie Beach has historically paid for large public works without big loans. We've done that. If you look back through the water sewer fund throughout the history of the town, starting with Mr. Wilford, we would build up money and then we would do something, we'd build up money and do something. That was on purpose. And so the fund is healthy. I'm not saying we should spend it all, because I agree with Arlen, you should be prudent about it, but I don't think we should take a $500,000 20-year loan to do public works infrastructure projects. That's why so many cities across the state have crappy water and sewer systems, because they do that and then they can't fix them as they go. And I mean, the system should be designed and operated to maintain as it goes. This is not an unexpected expense. Sonny's been telegraphing it for 5 years on his 5-year plan. It's now time. Council's done the right things with water sewer rates to make sure we have the money. If we finance some of it, I'm fine, but I don't think we should ever finance for 20 years for a water sewer system, personally. Because then if it gets wiped away in the storm, now you're paying for it for the rest of that time, and you're done. So, but I think we give the information to Arlen and let him churn it through his sausage grill and come back to us. That's my view.
Yeah.
We don't need a motion, I guess, for that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. The other thing I was going to tell you about is that one of the other programs they have, which is a grant program, is for an asset management program, and I provided you with information on that also, and something I'd just like for you guys to think about between now and next spring, and whether or not it would be of any benefit to us. So, talked with a couple of other towns.
So which one is that provided in? Is that in one of the packet things? Or?
Yeah.
Packet of what?
It's in this one right here that says it's with all the public works stuff.
Okay.
purple.
The purple one?
No, it's not the purple one. It's the one that says Asset Management Guide and Supplement.
It's behind the purple sheet.
Behind the purple.
Yeah.
Behind the purple sheet.
Okay. And,
I'll get it, it's fine.
Okay. Okay.
It's in the packet. I have PW at the top, but we can pack it come back to that.
We get these more clearly later.
So, I just provided that for your information, and if you'd like to talk to Sonny about it sometime, there is money available for that. Carolina Beach, I believe, received a grant to do theirs in the RAM this past spring. Wrightsville Beach did not get their application approved, but just thought I'd throw that out there.
Okay. Do you know why they didn't get it approved?
No, I don't. I talked to Tim, and he didn't go into any detail on that.
Okay.
And he said most of all, the reason why they went on and did it themselves, paid for it themselves, and said most of all it really helps them with their CIP, which is their capital investment plan. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Old business. Your article is
yes,
up.
Ma'am. So everybody should have a copy under old business. And the mayor, I think you have
you disregard that since you updated it.
So. Sorry, never. Nancy's handing out a colored copy.
This is the most recent version since this afternoon.
Okay, thank you.
A new version.
Wish you'd already put one out for Jim.
Very patriotic.
So Jim had one. Is it different?
No, that's the same one.
Yeah, it's the same.
Oh, did I already put one out there?
Yeah.
I printed the one that he sent us an email.
Yeah.
To put it on the desk.
Yeah, so y'all do have it. It's the same. I thought it was. Good job, Nancy. Nancy number two. Okay, so we went round and round on this. Appreciate good inputs from the mayor, good inputs from Jim Dugan. And so I think we're close, right? I think we're there, but we'll see, right? So basically, the inputs from the mayor were we need to make sure that if it's with a department head and his immediate family member, and then it's the department head and the liaison, not really getting the personnel person in there, so I took all that out. And then from Jim Dugan, he had two issues. One, well, actually the mayor also said in an open meeting you have to have the vote, which she's correct, so I fixed that. And you see that in red and blue. Jim Dugan's inputs were, okay, you have to protect a prospective employee, so if there's issues, you should do that in a closed meeting and then come out and vote, which I agree with. And so the way I address that in the red on number one is discussion of the employment decision by council with approval by a majority vote in an open meeting with a related member abstaining from the vote if the relationship is a council member. So if they're related to one of us, you have to abstain, which is how it should be. The discussion may be in closed session as desired by the council, but the decision to hire requires a majority vote in open session. So if there were issues, council could elect to go into a closed session to discuss them and then come out, and either it would be a decision not to hire or a decision to hire. And then you don't have to go into why, which is protecting the employee, which is what Jim's first issue was. And I thought it was a good issue. So the second issue was all the stuff you see is gone now about the other department heads, because his point was, look, this is a council issue. Council should do their job and not try to drag the department heads into it. So I thought that was fair too, so I took that out. So, and then the last one was poor grammar on my part, corrected by the mayor, was the fact that I wrote the last sentence saying if someone doesn't tell us they're related and we find out later, it could be grounds for termination. But the way I wrote it the first time was pretty bad, right? It didn't make any sense. So engineer's writing is never a good thing. So I rewrote that section. All applicants for employment with the town are required to disclose the names of relatives currently employed by the town as indicated on the employment application. If an employee is hired and it is discovered the employee failed to provide this information during the hire process, this may be grounds for termination of employment. So we don't have to fire them, but the council could decide that, okay, you know, you kept something from us. So basically what it's doing is it gives us the decision and putting it out there that, okay, if you don't tell us and we find out, we could decide to terminate you. Again, remember why we got into this. I think we need to balance the issues of being able to get good employees, and just because they're related shouldn't eliminate someone, with the fact that we have to avoid the appearance of, I can't even remember the word now. What's the word for that when you hire employees? Nepotism. Thank you. There you go. See, get a history major and they'll help you out. I'm going to get you to write stuff. So the mayor doesn't get me on. So balancing that, I think, works pretty well with this. It involves the whole council in the decision. It allows the council to discuss it in closed session if they want to really talk about the issue. If it's a council member's relative, they have to abstain, so we put that in our policy, which is good practice. If it's a department head's relative, we can discuss it in closed session so we don't have to offend the department head by telling them their cousin's a bobo or whatever. So I think it meets all the tenets of a good policy. And again, I tried to tailor this on policies from New York Fire Department and Princeton University that I found when I started this process. So I open it to your inputs, or after your inputs, I'll make a motion.
I think we hammered this one really hard.
Appreciate all the help.
I'm okay with that.
Cool. You good down there? You good down there? I make a motion we adopt Article 4. Oh, good. You can. Sorry, trying to go fast.
I sent you an email. That my only concern with this is that it specifically addresses full-time positions.
Yeah.
The current policy now prohibits the hiring of
appointed
relatives for full-time positions,
right,
which kind of leaves it open for part-time or temporary. So do you want, this only says full-time positions employees, do you want it to be all job vacancies in Section A that have to have an exception by council for appointed relatives? So that would be a lifeguard or somebody we hire in the recreation program for the summer or part-time. And then do you also want Section 1 to apply to part-time and temporary? Or do you want some statement in here that this does not apply to non-full-time?
I'm open to your guys' thoughts on that, right? Lifeguards and stuff like that. No, that's all right. I think lifeguards and stuff like that.
Well, it would also be, I guess, firemen and policemen that are auxiliary.
Well, so volunteer firemen is totally different,
you know what I mean?
Right? Yeah.
I mean, like all the auxiliary policemen with the five that we have, and at some point we may have firemen that are auxiliary firemen.
Well, they're part-time. They're all paid.
Yeah, they're all part-time. They're
okay.
Yeah, they get
so they're
bucks
not just
they
volunteer. They are part-time.
Or 12 bucks. Yeah.
Okay.
Why don't we have one policy?
I'm fine with that. The
I
same,
mean, one policy.
Making it apply to everyone's fine with
yep.
me.
Yeah. And if it requires this much time, we'll give it that much time. If it requires that much time,
right,
we'll give it that much time.
Okay. So then in Section A and C, we would delete full time. So
just
saying,
for job vacancies. Section A and Section C into a position. Okay. So I make a motion that with the deleting full-time in Section A and Section C, we pass this as presented.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Thank
it passes. You.
There we go, yes.
Thank you. I'll stop bothering you with emails about employment.
And I have one comma for you to delete, Nancy.
in the Section A next to department head?
Yes.
Between A and town council?
Yes.
Wow, nice.
She
got
that's
it.
Probably my.
Yes.
That was probably my comment, just so you know.
In all honesty, David, I thought you were right the first time.
I'm sure it was my comment.
I thought you were right the first
that's
time you presented this thing.
Yeah, it's all right.
Okay.
Working through the process is good.
Now
we're new business.
We have no new business.
Greg, you has, right?
We have no mayor updates. We have Commissioner Craig over here.
Oh, cool.
Okay,
sure.
You ready for that? Okay.
We're ready for that.
Members of the council, I would refer you to the spreadsheet I have in front of you here for a moment. This was put together by Josie based on some detail. Now, first thing I'm going to do is read a memo I'm going to give to you. It's not long. Just to quickly maybe give the town some background on what we're doing and why we did it. During the budget discussions this year, it became apparent to all of us that we had immediate financial challenges, infrastructure and staffing needs for a growing community. As a council, we increased real estate taxes to cover these current demands for police officers and full-time firefighters. We have additional needs in the future to sustain both the in-season infrastructure and the need to add space to the aging town hall and fire department. These financial needs are further exacerbated by the lack of committed financial resource from federal and possibly state levels for coastal storm damage reduction requirements to protect both our beaches and our homes. In this environment, we have sought ways to make our reserves grow and discussed with other county communities options for making our nourishment funding self-sustainable. Investigating options for Curry Beach, we decided to look at ROT flexibility and ROT property inventory. Commissioner Hagler led this effort with an initial visit to the county tax office and noted that our town had 98 open accounts for ROT collection. Council asked that Commissioner Jim Dugan and myself look into the perceived disparity between the number of accounts versus the number of homes with apparent short-term rental occupancies. Jim Dugan and I have completed the initial phase of that work by reviewing websites, advertising rentals, as well as doing physical drives through the town, noting homes with rental signs prominently displayed. Here's what we found in those sheets in front of you. We have 98 open ROT accounts with the county. We have identified 241 rental properties and identified the owners of those rental properties. We have 66 of those properties which are actually out-of-state owners. Now, these current open ROT accounts are generating gross ROT revenues for the past year, which is from 7/15 to the end of 6/16, of $880,000 in round numbers. Beach Nourishment gets 60% of the first half of that money, or $265,000. Town Activity and Support of Tourism receives an additional $220,000 to cover the activities we do, beachfront lifeguards, as well as activities to support tourism. The remaining funding goes to the TDA for developing advertising and tourism, and that is in the $400,000 range. Now, before we go forward, I want to say that rentals are very important to our community, and these owners deserve our support. They bring in tourists, they bring in business, they bring jobs and entertainment, and they're responsible for a significant piece of town economy. The contributions in taxes and wages are the very basis of our growth. These ROT funds and the state sales taxes that follow are not paid by the rental owners. I believe that they or their property manager are responsible to collect these fees. The fees are to be paid by the renters. Therefore, it would appear that education is needed. If appearances are true, it is quite possible that more than doubling accounts could more than double the income for both ROT and grow income for the sales tax apportionments from the state. If we looked at doubling, we could go from $880,000 to $1.6 million. All this is a benefit to the local community and has potential to relieve some of the financial pressure on this community. I would not think this is unique to Curry Beach. It is a possible problem in many coastal communities. Our next step is to visit with county management to get their advice on this issue. So if you would take a quick look at the pages here, the first 98 accounts, which actually goes, is the first two pages principally, were what you brought to us, David, in your initial finding. These were the properties that had been identified, complete with the out-of-state owners and the in-state owners, the name of the property, the address, the permit numbers within Curry Beach, and who the rental agent might be if it was so designated. That 98, based on the work done by Josie, by myself, by Jim Dugan, and with help from other members of my family, we were able to identify, either factually on VRBO or another website, by identification of pictures and address numbers, or by going through town and identifying properties that specifically had rental signs attached to the property with phone numbers so you could rent that property. So as you go through this, you can see that there is a significant amount of opportunity to educate people who are very important to this town on the requirements and what the value of that requirement is. I don't know if there's any questions, but I can say this, is that our town clerk has made arrangements for Nancy and I to meet with Emily and I and her to meet with the county officials on August 24th at 2:30 in the afternoon. Is that the right time?
10 a.m.
Sorry?
10 a.m.
10 a.m. Oh, early. Geez, yes. I got to get up early.
Oh. Nice. Nice.
Only kidding. Look, only kidding.
When I get
nice.
Up at four,
thank you.
Again,
I appreciate
I'll call you. Okay.
Right. So, but
nice to both of you.
So, lastly, were these represented just by the individual owners, or were they part of a rental group?
Most of these,
if you
sorry,
were you able to determine that?
What we could determine was on VRBO, there's VRBO numbers, yeah. Right? They have. Schedules on, hey, here's when I'm rented, here's when I'm not rented, pick one of these not rented dates.
So it's just the individual then, the owner.
Yes. Okay. So in VRBO, they were individual owners. When it gets down to whether it be one of the good companies on the island that handle rentals, it's hard to say whether, you know, I think in that case, they just turn the management over to the rental company.
What was brought up by P&Z was, you have a rental company that has 10 properties. How do you know that they're turning in the taxes for all 10 properties?
So the tax office requested the realtors to break them out by property, and they started doing that.
They're already doing that?
They're required by law to do that. But
no,
they're required by law to do that, but New Hanover County has not been accepting what, I mean, they have it in their records, in their office.
Yeah.
But New Hanover County doesn't require it, so they
right,
have
they
it.
Do now.
But now they've changed that.
Right.
So
they changed it after I'm meeting last year.
You have an individual account.
Yeah.
That's right.
Okay.
Well,
an address.
The realtor has an account, but they have to break it down by property. So they could give us a list of all the properties they represented.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay.
Because the county came back to us. When I met with them, I was like, guys, what are you doing? I said, you should send out a letter, and we got them to send a letter to all the real estate offices and requested give us the property information, and they did. So, one, this is awesome, right? So
yes.
This is exactly what
yes.
I visualized. And I like you're working with the county. They sent out a letter last fall, which we got a copy of, to, I think, everyone in Cary Beach, but I'm not sure how they sent it out. What I think we should work on and bring to the next council meeting is a letter to all these property owners saying, we believe you are a rental property. If you're paying your room occupancy tax and attach the requirements, thank you very much. If you're not, we recommend you review this statute, because we're encouraging the New Hanover County Tax Office to contact you. Mm-hmm. We'll probably get some hate mail back from that, but I'm fine with it. And I think at the same time we make we work with Island Gazette to put something in the Island Gazette mm-hmm. to everyone that, hey, Cary Beach, during the election, all of us sat on NPR and in the community center and said we were going to work on room occupancy tax. This is saying we actually did it, so we should put it in the Gazette. And I'm sure Willard, if we gave him, here's the details of what we're doing, he'd be glad to run that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's before we sick the, I mean, meet with them, but I think if we do it in the right timing, okay, we told people, you know, because the tax office will be nice to them too initially, but in the long term, 5% will not comply and require stronger mm-hmm. tactics, but 95% if they realize they may be doing it unknowingly or they may be doing it knowingly, but once you shine the light, they'll comply, I think. And I think you should, when you meet with them, tell them the same thing I told them last fall. You're the tax assessor. We pay you money to collect taxes. Do your job. And if you need resources, go to the county, but you're responsible for enforcing this. We'll help you. We did a big part of this for you. Mm-hmm. And this is what I told them we were going to do, so they shouldn't be surprised. I'm not saying they won't be, but they should be. Awesome work.
I think, you know, there's opportunity. There's opportunity here. Are all of these totally accurate?
No.
I can't say that.
Yeah.
Right? Could they, in fact, double our income? I can't say that either. But it does seem logical it could.
Right.
And if we can do that, then maybe we don't have to have discussions about things we need to do next time we do the budget for the needs of the community.
Yeah.
Right? So.
And if it's only 10%, it's $80,000.
That's right.
Yeah. So, I mean,
that's true.
That's good work.
So.
I have one observation, and I've already made one request. Mm-hmm. You have a house here on Cutter Court, and the HOAs that have houses on Cutter Court,
yeah.
They have their own, regulations, mm-hmm. that you have to rent year-round. You can't rent short-term. So the HOAs may be interested in, some of them may be interested in knowing that.
Well, we have HOAs that declined to provide list of renters. So maybe once we actually get to the county can ask them to be more hospitable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I asked you earlier, and I want the rest of you to know, I had asked Craig that maybe depending on what the county says and how we begin working with them to write up a little report on exactly how we made this happen, what the process was that helped us to get to this. Because in talking with some other beach communities, I'd say almost every beach community on the North Carolina coast would like to know what we did and how we did it so they can do something very similar.
Please do credit
planning
and zoning since we took the heat 2 years ago.
Yeah. And so I'm looking forward to that so we can help everybody else on the coast too. And you'll become famous. You'll be written up in Time Magazine.
I don't think so.
Cool. So I'm very proud of the work you and your group did.
It's like in most corporations, I don't care how hard you work. I care what results are achieved.
That's right.
Yeah. So
if there aren't any results, it doesn't mean anything.
That's right.
I'm very proud of your results. So.
Okay.
Okay, so we're going to talk to the county and we'll see what happens with them and come back and let you guys know.
All right.
Okay. Anything else anyone on the council has or wants or anything?
Make a motion we adjourn.
Second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, we are adjourned.
Nice job with Dennis.
Would you care to just write them out?
Thank you.
Right now, jokes on the side of the camera.